Crowds in Washington and in New York commemorating the 7th anniversary of September 11th. Live from Ground Zero here in New York, where memorial services took place this morning, is WNYC's reporter Arun Venugopal. Arun, thanks for coming back with us. You know, we look at the crowds, we see the wide shots of the locations, but really these commemorations are composed of individual people, right?
Yeah, and I think that's something that's really apparent when you talk to these family members beforehand, or even the bystanders. You know, you hear such different stories of how they're moving on, and sometimes in some ways it gets easier, and in other ways it gets a lot harder, even though it's been 7 years. There's sort of an ebb and flow to this process with every different individual you speak to.
Well, who have you spoken with, and what have you found this morning?
There was one family I spoke to. It's the mom. She brought her two daughters. Her husband was a firefighter who died in the attacks, and she was saying, you know, on one hand, it does get easier, but the kids, they start asking a lot more questions, and in that sense, it gets harder. I mean, they've gotten kind of used to it as a family, talking about their father, their husband in the past tense. But, you know, especially in this last year, she said, one of them actually wasn't even born when the father died. And she said, all the questions that start happening, especially as this day approaches, she said, you know, some of them you just don't have answers for. It gets so hard to say. So she has really mixed feelings about days like this.
You know, we've been talking about that, you know, questions 7 years after that come from the minds and mouths of little children all morning. It's amazing that you're finding that even down there. What about people who have no apparent connection to the site? Have you spoken with any of those?
I actually found one man who, he's standing across the street. He came at 6 a.m., well before any of the crowds really showed up, and he knows a woman in his office, I think, whose husband died. They don't know each other too well. But he said, you know, for years, it was just an abstract concept to him, this man, her former husband who died. And he was so affected. You know, he showed up so early. He said, you know, I used to avoid this whole thing, but now I had to come here. And he kept on kind of breaking down because he's gotten to know this man that he never actually met, in a way which he felt he had to come and sort of pay tribute in this way. And, you know, he hasn't even discussed this with the woman herself. He's kind of done this without her knowledge. He doesn't know if he'll even mention it to her, but he was just compelled to come here. So in that sense, again, you know, find the way in which, while on one hand you kind of, everybody wonders, you know, will the victims of 9/11, how will they be remembered? Will they be remembered? Will this all kind of just sort of dissolve as the years go by? But in the other sense, you have people who slowly kind of become part of that larger group of individuals who are affected directly.
A lot of depth of emotion there. It's a fascinating story, Arun, but it's also, you know, just a deep hole there at Ground Zero, surrounded by chain link fence, yet it produces so many memories for so many people, as you've discovered this morning.
Yeah, for the people who are participating in the process, that's something that, you know, it's a bit of a downer that they can't really go, you know, be participating in the process in their the whole time. For them, and it's very important, that direct connection they have, the space, you know, the pit. For all of us, obviously, it has a, you know, really strong kind of a symbolism there. And so, you know, they have to, for practical reasons, they have to do it across the street now. So this process, the ceremony, will never happen again at the pit, because it's going to be a complete construction site next year. They won't even be able to go in there, as I understand it. And then after that, it'll be built up. So there's sort of a special quality to this year, the fact that they can at least go down there. But there is a certain kind of a loss they feel, that they're being slowly, as time progresses, as the site gets built up, it changes the way that they can kind of remember what happened that day.
You know, you're reminding me now of some really interesting stuff. I mean, obviously people missed the towers when they collapsed, but people also missed the wreckage and debris and the site when it was, you know, filled with construction equipment, hauling stuff away. Now you say they're going to miss the empty hole as it becomes a construction site again. What a fascinating narrative.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, in a sense, you know, people, obviously, they, you know, when the towers went down, suddenly the towers became these very special buildings for people who might not have had any feelings for them beforehand when they actually stood. And then the hole itself becomes special. It becomes a very special place. It's such a, you know, it's sort of blank slate. People project these feelings onto it. And now that that's been, you know, 6 or 7 years, that's changing. And suddenly it'll become the memorial site. Perhaps people will develop an attachment for as the years go by, and that gets built, and that becomes the site where people go and, you know, pay honor to those people who died.
Well, it's a very vivid narrative of collective memory. I guess I'm without getting schmaltzy, you know, I'm motivated to ask, you know, how are you doing today?
I'm sorry, I didn't quite catch that. What's that?
How are you doing today, personally?
You know, when you hear the names being read, it's very affecting, and it just kind of goes along for hours. But then sometimes somebody says something. One of the family members says something to, say, their dead brother or brother-in-law or somebody else. And I think that really kind of, you know, brings it home. And, you know, you sometimes talk to strangers here, like I said, that man before who has no real connection directly to it. But, you know, they frame it in a way which sometimes it becomes very raw and also reminds you of the immediate day of 9/11 itself.
Right.
The days after where you meet people in the street who are still searching for their family.
Well,
you know,
Arun, thanks for bringing.
It's raw.
You've definitely brought it back for us this morning. Thank you, Arun.
Sure, thanks.
Arun Venugopal is WNYC reporter, coming live to us this morning from Ground Zero. And powerful metaphors there. Jonah Lehrer, Ground Zero is still an empty space, as Arun was saying, and people are looking into it. And it's not so much what they're seeing, but the metaphors they're evoking there in themselves. That's what's interesting.
Yes, and in that emptiness, everyone sees something different. We're not all experiencing, even though it's the same date and it's the same event, each of us relives a slightly different 9/11.
And that's a fascinating experience that has a neurological base in the brain.
As does every other experience.
Right. But, you know, not to just sort of trivialize it scientifically, I mean, this is if you were to do MRIs of what's going on with people today, it would actually be very, very different than what happens on other days, right?
I think so. I think you'd see, you know, it's a very emotional day for just about everybody. I think you'd see all these emotional circuits, all these primal circuits. It's a stew of fear and loss, you know, and these emotions definitely influence the way we think on days like today.
Well, and we've talked about all of it in this hour. Thanks so much for joining us, Jonah.
Thanks so much for having me.
Jonah Lehrer, of course, the editor-at-large for Seed Magazine. Thanks for joining us this whole hour. There's lots of ways you can stay with us here at The Takeaway. You can go to Facebook, Friend Feed, Twitter, and our own website, thetakeaway.org. We're talking about, you know, what if in the war on terror and in the aftermath to September 11, what would have happened, for instance, if we hadn't done anything after September 11? Also, how do you explain to kids what happened on that day 7 years ago? Elena in Brooklyn has to deal with the issue in a very special way.
I have to remember September 11th a little differently than some, and I'd like to say what I'm about to say for all the parents out there. Although we obviously know what September 11th means, it also happens to be my child's birthday. And so I have to also remember that September 11th for me and my family is a very happy day.
And here's another what if you shared.
This is Alana calling from Brooklyn, New York. Perhaps if we had not spent money on military campaigns, we would have spent money on infrastructure things so that we would have had a better levee system to withstand Hurricane Katrina, and we wouldn't have had the problem with the bridges that collapsed in the United States.
What if we'd done things differently after 9/11? Thanks for sharing all of your what-ifs at 877-8-MY-TAKE. I'm John Huckaberry. This is The Takeaway.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.